Contrary to popular belief, most guys with man breasts cannot just bench press their way to perfect pecs. They have a medical condition called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. A world-renowned plastic surgeon, Dr. Lista has perfected the procedure for correcting gynecomastia. Find out more at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca. Get off the bench and into the game. Theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
His city, his house. No one beats him in his house. Bob McCowan in Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Sorry to interrupt, Shannon, but we're on.
What is that? What are you typing, a book?
Actually, that's not for me. That's a reply.
Oh, a reply to you?
Yes.
It's like a whole page.
It was, yeah.
Wow.
That's why I was reading it.
Is it an email or a
text?
A text. Wow. Usually people don't text that much, do they?
No, but a lot of people I find now are texting rather than emailing at all, just in case their emails get subpoenaed. I don't know. I guess their texts could get subpoenaed too, but
so here's what I don't
understand. To destroy.
You understand I am not technically inclined.
I do indeed.
Right. So, and
you have to have two control panels, it's so bad.
Yeah. And I'm not apologetic about it.
No.
It's just who I am. But here's what I don't understand. If I'm going to turn my phone on, if I'm going to take it out of my pocket and look at it.
Yes.
I have a thing. I hit the thing for text. I hit the thing for email.
Mm-hmm.
They're equally easy to see and address.
Okay.
What I do not understand is people who will not respond to a text and will only respond to an email or vice versa. I don't, what is the logic of that? I spent 4 days in Nassau.
Yes.
With
texting is cheaper, Bob. Texting is cheaper.
Oh, okay. So is this making my point even more? So I spent 4 days with a pal of mine who you know.
I do indeed.
An attorney who shall go nameless, Gord Kirk, who came down and so we spent the last 4 days together.
Your wives were there, though. Your better halves.
Yeah. And they communicated fine. But this is a big resort, and they were staying actually in another tower. And so communication was important. Where are you going to be? When are you going to be there? Where will I meet you? Blah, 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 blah. Now, we know our way around. They'd never been there before, so it's their first time. So this was all very important. For 2 days, I couldn't get a hold of him until finally he emails me. I said, I've been texting you since before your plane landed, and you haven't responded. I just assumed your phone was off or that you are completely stupid, both of which are possible.
Mm-hmm.
He says, no, I don't text, I email. But if you go to your phone, and it's right there, it's right beside it.
Yeah.
And they tell you when there's a little thing that says, you got to text.
Yeah, I actually find texting much more efficient, quicker.
Well, yeah.
There has to be a reason for Gord to do that, because Gord's a very methodical person. He thinks things out.
Well, he's older than me, so maybe that has something to do with it.
He looks younger, though.
He does not. Oh. Bite your tongue. Well, let me rephrase that. We look about the same, but he's much older.
Really? Then he looks great.
Much older. Kind of like you.
Hey, by the way, we may have solved the John Scott problem.
Did he fall on his sword?
No, he's in the American League.
They sent him down.
He got sent down.
What's the deal?
Well, if he's not on an NHL roster as the All-Star weekend starts, he doesn't qualify for the All-Star weekend.
Is that the way it works?
Yes. That's what I was texting about. So, yes.
Now, the idiot producer says he's expected to be back.
That's what people say. They picked up Kevin Connaughton on waivers, and
So the All-Star had to go to the minors.
So the All-Star has to be put on waivers and go to the minors for a while. So now if he goes down and plays and gets injured or something like that.
Well, if you weren't with us yesterday, and thousands weren't probably.
Actually, I had people say that the most entertaining part of the show was me on the phone.
That's because they were talking to you. I had people say that the least entertaining part of it was.
That is hurtful, Bob.
So Bill Daly is in here yesterday. The deputy, whatever he is, commissioner.
Grand Poobah.
Second, number two in command.
Number two.
Yeah. Number two in command. Was profoundly embarrassed by the John Scott thing.
Well, they all should be. It's a loophole that the social media world found. And they voted John Scott in. And the question becomes is, are they doing it for the betterment of John Scott? Are they laughing with John Scott at this, or are they laughing at John Scott?
No, they're laughing at the NHL for allowing them to do this. Or they should be, at least, anyway. Hmm.
Well, I thought people liked hockey and liked the NHL.
And let's get something straight. I got nothing against John Scott. He's a goon, you know, and I don't like goonery. But I don't dislike John Scott. I don't know John Scott. But John Scott's not an all-star.
I agree with you, Bob.
As far from it being an all-star as you can almost get.
Yeah.
He is barely an NHL player. Barely. And right now isn't even an NHL player. And this is what's wrong with cockamamie systems like the NHL. They're all like all leagues. They keep changing the rules to try and fix something that's clearly broken and can't be fixed.
Which is the All-Star game.
Which is the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Can't be fixed unless I have the only good idea.
Please, proceed, Bob.
$10 million in the penalty box. You want a real game? You don't think there'd be a real game for $10 million?
Of course there would be, Bob.
Of course.
But the All-Star weekend is not supposed to lose $9 million.
I've said before, put me in charge. All we're going to do... We're going to raise the price of those All-Star tickets.
Oh, that would really be good, Bob. Do you know how much? They're already expensive.
And they're all bought by corporations who don't care what it costs. Either you want to do it or you don't want to do it.
Corporations have changed, Bob.
No, they haven't. There's no corporation that wouldn't go if the tickets were $100, $150 more. None. John, you know that.
Okay. I'm not arguing.
You know that.
I'm not arguing.
And why does everything have to make money?
I can't believe you, of all people, are saying that.
I set you up for that one, didn't I? You didn't expect to hear that.
No. Bob the Socialist, voting for Bernie Sanders now. I mean, it's great.
See, I have a dilemma when it comes to the U.S. election now that you brought it up. I mean, I will not vote for a Republican because they are just a bunch of boobs.
Yeah.
And the boob that's in first place there is... Well, he's an idiot.
He's a real estate mogul here in Toronto, too.
Yeah, well. The problem I have is I don't like either of the Democrats either.
Yeah. Do you watch State of the Union? Do you watch the State of the Union?
You know, I watched the first 60 seconds.
It was long.
And I said, he said right at the beginning, he says, it's going to be a short one.
It wasn't.
He lied again, huh?
I don't want to say.
I had great hopes for Obama, but I'll tell you, I don't think he's had much depth. I mean, he's not going to go down as a great president, and I know that the Republicans have stonewalled him.
You think?
No. I know that.
Shush.
You know, at least Clinton. I think Clinton had one of the two houses.
Yes,
I don't know
he did.
He
did.
I think he had the House of Representatives. Yeah.
Yeah. He might have even had both at one point.
I don't think so, John, but you may be right. But I think he had one of them for a good portion of his 8 years. Yeah. So he had the ability to do things. And the Republicans are just not going to vote for anything that a Democratic president wants.
Politics in the United States, and to a lesser extent here, but it's at a certain point, you had to believe that it was getting that way here. Politics have been so polarized. It's not as if you're trying to run the country. It's you're trying to run the country only one way without any discussion, without any compromise. The right is right and the left is left. There's no centrists. I mean, and things work when there are centrists.
Yeah, but the system, it's the flaw in the system, I guess. I don't know. Like, theoretically, the prime minister in Canada is voted in based on his party getting the most seats.
Well, yeah, he's a member of the House, yeah.
Yeah, but there's no separate ballot.
Well, you know who our head of state is. You know that. You know who our true. If you look at the giant map somewhere in the world that says the head of state of Canada, you know who that is.
Yeah, Guy Lawrence.
Good answer, but the person is British. It is the Queen.
It is the Queen. Yeah.
You know, so we have a different system, and that's become now just a...
No, but here's my point. Like, if you vote in the United States on the ballot, one of the things on the ballot is president.
President, yes.
You can vote Republican in every other thing
and
still vote for a Democratic president.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
The president, as is the case with this Democratic president, the Senate and the House are both...
Republican-based.
Republican... Dominated.
Controlled, yes.
Controlled.
Yeah.
That can't happen in Canada.
No.
In order for the prime minister to be elected, he has to have the majority number of seats. So if the prime minister is preaching something, we are going to legalize marijuana.
Yes.
Okay? Just as a topic.
Yeah.
Not that I necessarily have an opinion on it. And he gets elected, he can do it.
Well, it has to go through three readings, and it has to go through the whole process.
I understand how that all works. But in theory, as you know, if we understand that most of the time people in your party will vote for whatever the leader of the party wants you to vote for.
In theory, yeah.
In theory, yeah. You don't have to, but in theory.
I mean, we did that when we allowed individuals to vote on when we talked about the death penalty in our country. Everybody, they didn't have to vote by party there for that one, but. You're right. If the Liberals all decide to vote, then now all 150-plus seats vote in block, then three times
right.
It's a law.
Which makes it difficult to analyze the presidency of somebody like Obama, because he hasn't had, like, I don't know what he would have gotten through. I don't know what he would do. I can tell you this, after about an hour in office, he probably looked around and said, well, this is going to be a wasted 8 years. I'm not going to be able to get anything done. Because the Republicans are going to block everything I do just out of spite, out of politics.
Yeah, and the interesting,
and that's what I don't like about the U.S.
The interesting thing about that is the guy who was the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, in the end was really, the Republicans turned their back on their own Speaker of the House because they felt he was getting too close to
Obama.
No,
I know he's, yeah, well.
So, anyway, enough of our politics, Bob.
Yeah.
We do like our politics, so.
Mike Johnston, the former head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, will speak, we think, for the first time. Certainly to us, for the first time.
Yeah.
Since he lost the job. Billy Jaffe of the NHL on Sportsnet. Paul Jones is in jolly old England, where the Raptors, surprisingly, are going to play a basketball
game. Did you know that, Bob?
When I got back, I found out.
Boy.
Don Banks of Sports Illustrated will be with us. And in studio, the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays for the first time, Mark Shapiro, who will sit right there, and we'll have him for half an hour.
Are you buying donuts?
Why?
Well, I might.
He likes donuts?
Mark might need a donut or a muffin or something.
How do you know he likes donuts?
Or a muffin. I said a muffin. He might like a pastry.
Why?
Just be hospitable to him.
I invited him in. That's as hospitable as I get.
That's it?
That's all.
Okay.
So spring training is tick, 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 just a few weeks away, pal.
Yeah, I know. You're going, obviously.
I don't know. And I haven't even talked about it.
Oh.
And there are some interesting free agents out there. The most interesting to me is Chris Davis, who has been of interest to me since the end of last season. And I've mentioned, while I'm not unhappy with what the Blue Jays have at first base, Davis is a real interesting potential catch. And I'm intrigued by why he and Cespedes and Upton and a bunch of others have not yet inked. And should we be surprised by this? Paul Severino is with us from the MLB Network. Hello, Paul. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. I mean, I was on hold for a minute there. I was listening to you guys talk about politics.
Yeah, I'm nervous
because I barely know anything about U.S. politics. I thought you were going to ask me about Canadian politics.
No, hell no. We don't know anything about that either.
Okay, good. But then I started listening because you're talking about donuts, so I was good there.
We're like CNN. You know, we're all over the map.
Ultimately, every conversation on this station comes back to donuts.
Exactly.
That's good. That's why I like being on. I like donuts.
So are you surprised at all that we still have, and I'm not talking about necessarily the absolute top of the food chain free agents, but some pretty good players, Upton, Davis, Cespedes, and others that are still out there. Is there any surprise to you in that?
I think that there's a big surprise that just the number of guys that are going to make 100-ish or more, perhaps in Chris Davis's case, $1 million are still out there on the market. I mean, it's mid-January at this point. I mean, it's not as though someone's not going to start their training regimen until they have a team that they know that they're going to. I mean, these guys are staying in some pretty decent shape, I would assume. But the fact that teams' plans are kind of being held up by this is amazing, because we all thought that, you know, once a guy like Hayward or Alex Gordon were to find a home, that the rest of the market would kind of sift itself out and figure itself out, and that has not been the case at all, which is really amazing. And then at first base, really, I mean, you thought Chris Davis was going to hold up the market, and I mean, he has, but then again, Chris Carter signs with the Brewers last week. So, you know, I think that obviously the big-name guys, as you mentioned, Upton, Cespedes, Chris Davis, and the like, we think that they might be holding things up, but at the same time, you might have some other guys, you know, like Chris Carter, like I mentioned, who says, you know what, the heck with it. I'm just going to go find myself a job here and not wait and see what some other guys got going.
So does this indicate prices are going up or prices are going down?
I have no idea. I mean, you can really go either way, you know, because I think that some players may, I mean, we've seen it in the past where some players may kind of see that the market is slow to develop, certainly not this slow. And you know, some guys will maybe do something like a one-year deal somewhere and hope for a bounce-back type season, or go somewhere where they can put up big numbers and then, you know, maybe have a big year, retest the free agent market and do it all over again. Or, you know, you could have something where, you know, mystery team comes out of nowhere and here's a $160 million contract for somebody who we all thought was going to get 90. I mean, it's really up for grabs. I think it could go either way. I can't imagine, although I'm not in his shoes, but I can't imagine that Chris Davis, knowing what we know, at least on the outside, that there's $150 and change million dollar offer out there for the Orioles, from the Orioles, I can't imagine that he would go anywhere for less. So if he goes somewhere else, you'd think it'd probably be more. So it could really go either way, given the situation with the player.
There is some speculation, I don't know whether you concur or not, but that the offer that he got from the Orioles, he believes the Orioles will go higher if, in fact, he gets a higher offer elsewhere, that the Orioles would probably match it. And that's the game he's playing, looking for that bigger deal, that $25 million a year deal rather than whatever it is, $21, $22 million a year. And then he goes back to the Orioles and says, all right, will you match this? And then I'll stay.
You got to ask yourself, who's his agent? And it's Scott Boras.
Well, I mean, we know that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's his
game.
His M.O. We don't often see guys, I mean, we've seen it with a handful of players, but certainly not always the big ticket items that Scott Boras has going into an offseason where they go back to the team that they were playing for. So maybe it's a situation where he's just trying to, you know, figure it out. And a few weeks ago, I was on whatever show I was doing, and, you know, we were talking about let's make a deal for, you know, players X, Y, and Z. And I was trying to think outside the box a little bit, and I heard you mention it before, with the Blue Jays, and that was actually my pick for Chris Davis.
Interesting, because that was mine too. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna go outside the box, I mean, I'll preface that by saying that knowing the offer that's out there, knowing the success that he's had in Baltimore, and clearly some sort of a comfort level, and the production is there as well. It seems like a no-brainer to go back to Baltimore. However, if it hasn't gotten done to this point, and you might be right, he's looking for something else, perhaps to drive up the price or maybe just more money anyway, I thought outside the box might be Toronto. I mean, you got guys that are going to come off the books this
That's
following
right.
offseason. And you want to have a little bit of insurance when and if a guy like Bautista or Encarnacion happen to sign somewhere else or whatever the case is. And we saw it last year when nobody thought that offense was a problem for the Toronto Blue Jays. What'd they do? They added more of it anyway, and they just tried to outslug. Now, of course, they brought in some pitching pieces as well, and a big one in David Price. I understand that, but at the same time, it wasn't as though they solely focused on the pitching. They also went out there and tried to get some offense too, and clearly it worked because they had a heck of a second half or August, September, and obviously fell a little bit short in the postseason, but you know they added some offense, so maybe that's something that they try to do again. But the Davis thing is one that really makes you scratch your head because it's not like he's getting an offer from, and I'll just throw it out there because we always talk about ballparks, but, you know, the Padres or the Mariners. Mm-hmm. You know, a slugger who's going to get a big offer from a team that plays in a pitcher's park where he's thinking, I don't know if I could put up numbers there. The team that's offering him the money is the same place where he's hit 150-some-odd home runs the last 3 years. So, but I don't know what he knows, so it's tough for me to say, but from my perspective, it's shocking that he's still out there, knowing that there's such a large offer on the table and has been for a while.
Is there a sleeper of all the free agents? Is there somebody that you look at this list and say, holy smokes, this guy can be a difference maker and isn't getting the respect he deserves?
You know, I think that there's probably it's tough for me to say because I would probably say like a Justin Upton, but I think that he can be a difference maker and he can put a team on his back. The only problem is that when he gets hot, he gets red hot, and then when he gets cold, he gets ice cold. And the only problem is that it almost feels as though it's, you know, a month on and a month off. And then at the end of the season, he's got great numbers. But when you're trying to ride that low point for a little while, it can get a little bit frustrating. And, you know, maybe that lack of consistency from day to day, not year to year, because his year to year numbers are terrific, but that day-to-day kind of ebb and flow may get a little frustrating, and maybe the defense isn't as good as a guy like Jason Hayward. So, you know, when Hayward signs for his big deal, how come Upton didn't get that? But I think that Upton can be a game changer depending on, you know, where he goes. I mean, it's just amazing to see whether it's Davis, whether it's Upton, whether it's Cespedes. So, you know, what has taken these guys so long to settle here, because you'd think the teams are trying to get their plans in place here for what direction you're going to go, but this would also be the time where more sleeper teams would pop up, and you know you figure going into your offseason plan that, hey, you know, we'll probably be pretty set by mid-January, early February, and then, oh, now we're actually there, and you see that player X, Y, or Z is still out there, and you say, well, you know, maybe we can get him a little cheaper, and then that's where your mystery team may pop up.
With Paul Severino of MLB Network. You know the other guy that we haven't mentioned yet who is intriguing to me, and he's one of those guys that I understand the reluctance of teams to make a commitment. I have no idea what he wants or what he's worth, but Yovani Gallardo is an interesting kind of guy. During the offseason, almost every team is looking to upgrade their third, fourth, fifth pitchers. We spend all offseason, you know, oogling these, you know, Price and the big name free agents, the front of the rotation guys who are now getting $30 million plus a year. But Gallardo's one of those interesting guys. You know, he's like a little better than 500 record, but his ERA's under 4. What do you make of him? Isn't he kind of a nice fit for almost any team?
I think so. For sure. I mean, you nailed it. I mean, you know, there's the Prices and there's the Greinkes and those guys, and there's probably a small handful or less number of teams that are going to be in on a guy like that or that can afford a guy like that. But so many teams, you would think, can afford a guy like a Yovani Gallardo. And the fact that he's still out there, I know that Ken Rosenthal and other guys have reported that maybe the Royals are talking to him. I mean, but again, slow developing market even with those guys. We just saw Kazmir sign officially a week or two ago. So
yeah,
it's
another
amazing
one.
But
yeah.
But I'm with you. I mean, I think a lot of teams would like a guy like Yovani Gallardo, consistently up around 180, 190, 200 innings. You know, he's going to get you, you know, like you said, a 3.5-ish ERA,
yep,
under four. I he's going to eat up innings, and he's going to be effective when he does it.
I have a hard time thinking of a team where he doesn't make the rotation. If you bring him in, you're telling me he isn't the fourth or fifth starter at worst in your rotation?
Yep.
He is. Everywhere.
Yeah, I think he's fourth at worst, third on many, and, you know,
maybe second on some.
Might even be a number two. Exactly.
Yeah, so I agree.
You put Doug Fister on that list too?
He's iffy.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
aren't you concerned?
But I'd probably take Gallardo over.
I understand that, but
yeah.
I mean, Fister could fill a void somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that's what teams need. Every team needs it. I mean, it would be nice to have a starting rotation as good as what the Nationals went into last year with.
You know, no kidding.
Five terrific starting pitchers. I mean, that's great. But, you know, end of the day, where did it get them? But, you know, you still, every team, like I said, needs depth to chew up a large number of innings, veteran presence. You know, Gallardo's still young. You could probably get him on a 4, maybe a 5-year deal. He's not going to cost you, you know, Price or Greinke or that type of money. You know, he's not going to come cheap. You know, you're not going to get him for $5 million a year. But at the same time, you know, you might get him for, I don't know what the numbers could be, but, you know, 15, 16, probably somewhere in that same kind of Mike Leake, Jeff Samardzija type range. Who knows? But I'm surprised that there just hasn't been more buzz. That's really the word that I think that it's all about, is the buzz. I mean, there's not a lot of buzz on these guys. I mean, you know, we're getting ready for a show at 6 o'clock, and we go into the meeting, and it's just like, you know, rumor after rumor after rumor, but it's just kind of like a nothing rumor. It's like, hey, this team's talking with this guy, kinda, and then there's this guy talking with that team, kinda.
Well, Groundhog Day is February 2nd, so.
Yeah. You know, but that's the way it goes. It's not. It really hasn't picked up a lot of steam to this point. I think that's what's got everybody so surprised. Maybe it's a milder winter and guys are just away from the office more. Who knows?
Before we let you go, so the new president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro, is going to join us in studio in about a half an hour from now. And we're going to have a nice long conversation with him. We talked to him the day he was hired on the phone, but this is his first visit into our studio. Give me a couple things you'd like to know about the Toronto Blue Jays that Mark Shapiro might be able to address.
How come they're not in on Gallardo?
Well, I'll ask that.
What is their interest level in Gallardo? I mean, you know, where else might this team look to upgrade? I mean, they're pretty set offensively, I would say, outside of...
Well, they need a catcher. They need another catcher.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, unless they got somebody in the system that I'm not aware of that's ready to come in, and I don't think there is one yet.
Well, I mean, the only problem with that is that their backup catcher he'll play every fifth day. And
well, he's Dickey's
other days too, but because he's R.A. Dickey's kind of catcher, so
he's just caddy.
You know, you can have a real big slop fest every fifth day if the catcher doesn't know how to catch the knuckleball. So they're, I would think, a little hamstrung there. Maybe there's another guy who can handle it. Who knows? But it seems as though the rapport between Toley and Dickey's pretty good.
Yep.
But I mean, just losing a guy like David Price. The offense is good, like we kind of agreed on, you know. Do you go out and add a Chris Davis and make a great offense that much better?
Well, a left-handed hitter in the middle of a right-handed power lineup, too. That's the other thing I like about
again,
Davis.
Yeah, it'd be a great move.
Oh, my
God. It would rob a team in that division of a huge bat.
Yep.
I mean, there's a lot to like about Chris Davis, you know, in Toronto.
Whether or not that happens,
who knows. But...
Let me ask you one more then. Osuna Sanchez, there's a lot of speculation as to which of those two, if either of those two, will be auditioned for the starting rotation in spring training. Do you have a take on what you might do with those two guys? Or would you leave, they're both babies, right? One's 21, the other's 22. Both were pretty good out of the pen last year. Do you leave them or do you go back to, but they both were starters on their way up? What do you do?
I first of all, you're careful on both because, I mean, we've seen it not exactly pan out all that well with guys in the past. Chapman going back and forth, staying. Neftali Feliz has had to deal with Tommy John. Jabba Chamberlain's had to deal with Tommy John. So first things first is be careful with the guys. Secondly, you know, I might lean a little bit more towards Sanchez. You can maybe revisit Ozuna again. He's 21 or whatever you said.
Yeah,
he was,
just 21.
21 years old. Maybe you can revisit that again in a year or two where he's still kind of young. But Sanchez is 23, 24 years old, so maybe he can handle an innings uptick. So that would be my vote. But first things first is just be careful with these guys because the last thing you need is for where you're already lacking in depth to blow one of these guys out. Okay. But I'll also say that it doesn't seem as though anybody's got the answer on how to prevent Tommy John. So
yeah, that's the truth. They know how to fix it once you need it, but they don't know how to prevent it. That's what we're waiting for.
Well, I got half of it going well.
Paul, good of you to take time for us. Enjoyed it very much. Thanks, pal. Anytime.
Good to talk with you guys.
We'll talk again. Paul Severino of the MLB Network.
You got to think, though, that if your dream comes true in signing Chris Davis, then one of the other two guys that hits the ball a long way in this for this club is traded before the season starts, right? Bautista or Encarnacion?
Well, I think...
Right?
Yes, because I think that's... Don't you think you have to do that at some point this year?
Going to sign them long term, because they're
How can you
exactly?
And if the budget is what it is,
right?
I mean, each one of them. Let's just say they conservatively each want a $5 million raise.
I think you're being very, very conservative when you consider what Chris Davis is going to get.
Well, it's just I'm being conservative.
Okay. Well, then
let's say they give the Blue Jays a hometown discount. That's $10 million a year more. Mm-hmm. Where are you going to get that? Where's that coming from? Now, Dickey's coming off the payroll, but that doesn't cover $20
million. No, you're right.
And Donaldson's price ain't going down, pal.
No, it's not.
And Pilar eventually is going to want more and deserves more and will get more.
And you have to think that, you know, Atkins and Shapiro, if they want to beef up this pitching staff at some point, they're going to want to spend money on some sort of free agent in the next couple of years, don't you think? Wouldn't you think?
I would think so, but I mean, in general terms.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. So, interesting.
Anyway, we'll talk to Mr. Shapiro about all these things a little bit later on. When we come back, Mike Johnston is the he's been former for a while, I guess, head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins. We haven't chatted with him. I don't know how many conversations he's had since he left the job. What's he doing? What happened in Pittsburgh? And has anything changed that he's seen since he left? We'll address all that when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Before the hour, Primetime continues coast to coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks, Canada's most listened to sports talk show. Bob McCowan, John Shannon. Billy Jaffe of the NHL on Sportsnet, Paul Jones, the Raptors radio broadcaster, Don Banks of Sports Illustrated, and the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro. Mr. Shapiro will be in here in about 19 minutes, and he will join us in studio for about a half an hour to address for the first time face-to-face what he's been doing, what the issues are. Is he interested in Chris Davis, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and many questions. Excuse me. Not so many weeks ago, the Pittsburgh Penguins, a team struggling, in relative terms at least, a team of that had high expectations, and I think many people had high expectations of them, did not get off to a good start. Their best player was not their best player. They couldn't put the biscuit in the basket. And quite often when that happens, there's a sacrificial lamb, and it happened to be the head coach, who it usually is. Mike Johnson joins us to talk a little about that and what he's doing and where he's going. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Good, Bob. How are you?
Excellent. Excuse me. I got a little something in my throat. Have you stayed in Pittsburgh? Are you still there?
I am now this week, just to clean up a few details, but I went out west for Christmas. We have a house in Blaine, Washington, so I got to spend some time. Our kids were home for Christmas, so it was nice out there, and I've come back this week, just as I mentioned, just to tidy up a few loose ends.
Blaine is about a foot from the B.C. border in state of Washington. Yeah. Yes.
So
Exactly.
Mike, have you, in the month, have you put a finger on the pulse of exactly what went wrong?
Well, when you look at, you know, the body of time, you're looking at 18 months, and basically through that time, I thought, you know, there were some highs, there were some lows. Certainly last year, the way we started through the first 6 months of the year, I thought we were playing at the best we could, and then we ran into the months of Christmas and then a series of injuries, and then we're pretty well devastated with our defense come playoff time. And then with the start of this year, I think every team in the league, as you guys know, how you start the season is so important. Just for confidence, just to try and the first 25 games, get off to a good start, put some teams behind you. And usually the playoff rankings, as you know, don't change a lot. They may change this maybe one year where it's a little bit different because there's so many teams that are close together, but they don't change much after the first 30 games. So where you're positioned after the first 30 is really critical. We lost our first three games, and then after that we went 15-7-3, but I just thought getting off to a better start was so important for us. We played Dallas, we played Arizona on the road, and then we came home and played Montreal. And Dallas and Montreal had good teams and were really playing well at that time, but still I thought we just weren't playing the way we should have.
It's the biggest, and I'm not telling you something you don't already know, the biggest story was Sidney wasn't himself. Were you able to understand, and how did you deal with Sidney not playing at what we would describe as regular Crosby levels?
Well, I thought Sid and I had a lot of talks over as the captain and a coach do, and I thought we had a good relationship through that time. And he didn't get off to a very good start. I thought our going back to our training camp, it was kind of a different training camp because we played five games and six nights at the end because of the Johnstown game and the right. Quebec City game. And so at the end of training camp, we rarely had guys playing together, and you know Crosby was going to play in the Johnstown game. We took him out of the Johnstown game. We put Gino into that game, and who we were going to play in each game, oftentimes we really didn't have even close to our lineup because of that situation. Most teams would deal with that earlier, but and it wasn't Jim Rutherford's fault. It was just that the way that the Johnstown game was presented after the fact of already getting our games or set, and the Quebec City game threw a wrinkle into our training camp. So I thought that impacted our start. I thought it impacted Sid's start to the season. And then he just didn't look the same for the first as he did last year. I thought last year he played really well, even though he didn't, as people talk about him winning the scoring title. He didn't win the scoring title. In the end, I think he was 5 points or 4 points behind Ben. But I thought his overall game was really good. But this year he just couldn't get it going in the first couple of weeks. He started to get better closer to the time when I was let go.
And the other big change in your roster was Phil Kessel. And, of course, we're in Toronto, and they're, you know, Phil Kessel's a polarizing person in this market. What was he like for you? And do you, to this day, do you believe in Phil Kessel as a scorer?
Well, I believe that we had to go out and get a winger who could score at that level for sure. And that was something that was a weakness in our group last year. Finding scoring wingers to play with Gino and Sid was challenging. And Phil, to be honest, when I dealt with Phil, I thought he was really good to deal with as a coach. From my perspective, he listened, paid attention. He did the things you wanted him to do. I don't think that the microscope was as strong here in Pittsburgh on him, and that may help him in the long term. But certainly, again, with a guy like that, there's high expectations. He's got to produce on a nightly basis. He probably didn't score at the rate which he felt he could have, or based on the chances, the quality of chances he had, he wasn't converting some of those chances, which I think he normally would have.
Do you think the chemistry that he and Crosby created or didn't create, was that something that should have worked and didn't, or never really had a chance to work?
Well, you never really know how players are going to play with each other. In training camp, they played 3 games together and looked phenomenal. When we started the season, I thought their first game in Dallas, they both had great chances, and they just couldn't convert. But as the week went along, or 10 days after that went along, I didn't think that they played particularly well together. And then we made the move to put Kessel, after about 2 weeks, put Kessel with Gino. I thought that was a better combination. Kunitz back up with Sid, and at that time we still had Dupuy, so Sid was playing with 2 players he was a little bit more familiar with, and I thought he started to really start to play better at that time.
The other lightning rod on your club was an 18-year-old kid named Daniel Sprong, who, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Jim Rutherford was adamant that he should stay with the big club, and yet he wasn't seeing very many games, nor when he was playing, not enough ice time. How did you view the Sprong experiment when you consider your background as an elite junior hockey coach?
Well, I know that sometimes it was reported that Jim and I, you know, had differences of opinion on how Daniel should be played or how much he should be played. To be honest, I thought we were really in sync with how we were going to move ahead with Daniel. We decided that in training camp, if he continued to play well at the beginning of the season, we were going to keep him for a determined amount of time. We weren't necessarily going to keep him for the whole year, but we were going to allow him to continue to play with us after that 9 games. And he started he had a very good training camp. He started the year well. But I knew, as did Jim, it's tough on young guys in this league. And Spronger, I thought, you know, in the games he was in, with the minutes he played, he did a very good job. Should he have gotten more minutes and more time? I'm not really sure, because I believe that, you know, guys can only go so long as young guys in the league. I saw Johansson and Niederreiter leave us in Portland, go to the NHL at 19, stay in the NHL and play for that whole season. Neither of them had very good years, but they started to play better after that. I still felt that Daniel probably needed more time in junior just to get that opportunity to play at a level where you're the guy and you're contributing and you're scoring. You don't want a young guy to lose his confidence. Right. And I talked about getting a scoring winger in Kessel. Well, Spronger is the type of player, as far as the Pittsburgh organization goes, that's a bright light on the wing. That he's a guy who can eventually come in on the wings, a guy who can make plays and can score.
Mike, I guess we never know what is next on the agenda for us, but whatever it is, we hope you're happy, and we thank you very much for taking a few minutes to join us today. I wish you all the best of luck, and look forward to talking to you again down the road. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Mike Johnston, the former head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
I answered the questions.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Is he more likely or less likely to get another head coaching job than Joe Average? Because it was Pittsburgh, because the expectations were high, don't you think that kind of that may hurt him?
Yes, but at the same time, I also think that I think Mike Johnson's a brilliant teacher, and I think there are certain types of coaches that are destined to be at certain levels. I loved what he did in Portland for so many years. I loved what he did when he was with Mark Crawford, both in Los Angeles and in Vancouver as an associate head coach. Perhaps he should be.
Maybe that's where he should be.
You know what? I keep hearing that the job in Portland is his if he wants, and perhaps that's where his strength is. When you look at all the players that came out of the Winterhawks Association.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
That he helped build that are now stars in the NHL.
Thank you, Mr. Shannon.
All right, Robert.
I bid you a fond adieu for the rest of today.
See you tomorrow.
Billy Jaffe, Paul Jones, Don Banks, and the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro. He will join us in studio next. This is Primetime.